back here, first things first. Now joined by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt in studio.
This
is nice to have you here.
I love
here.
It. I love being here.
We are so excited.
I'm just here with all the New England tears raining down on us.
Yes.
That's what you said too, huh?
Yep.
Listen, man, two guys, man.
Well, I'm just going by what he said.
I don't make the weather. I just report it. I'm looking outside. I don't know. I don't know where else it could have come from. Good to see you.
You too, man. You too.
A lot going on in the NFL. Even more going on right now in college ranks.
Yeah.
Let's get to it. The college football playoff is set after a great weekend of action. Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers will face off against Jalen Hurts and the Oklahoma Sooners in the Peach Bowl, while Justin Fields and Ohio State will take on Trevor Lawrence and Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl. So after a season of shuffling at the top, it is LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson. Joel, did the committee get it right?
Yeah, I don't think that they had any way to get this wrong, right? Unless they were going to do something absolutely crazy with Georgia as a two-loss non-champion over Oklahoma. I didn't think that was going to be the case whatsoever.
Joel might have resigned if that happened.
I think I would have. I think I would. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would have become a banker or something like that. I will say, at number one, I think that there was a conversation and a pretty vigorous debate between Ohio State and LSU and what their resumes were. At the end of the day, I still was one supporting Ohio State. I thought that they were more dominant over the ranked teams that they had played during the course of the year versus what LSU had done. But LSU's performance specifically on Saturday against Georgia, I think, ultimately was the trump card in that room and what made them the number one team in the country here going into the playoff.
I thought during the selection show, just to give them credit, I forget who it was, someone made a good point. So the argument for Ohio State was what they did in the second half against Wisconsin, blanking
sure.
Wisconsin to come back.
Yeah, 27-0 run.
And the counterpoint was, and if it could have been 30-0, thanks Ohio State, punched the last one in, you'd have covered. But regardless, the counterpoint was, yeah, LSU didn't need a great second half because
sure.
they had a great first half and sure. a great second half. So I don't think that there's a wrong answer here. Did the way it shook out, did it shake out to give us the best semifinal, in your opinion?
I think that ultimately the number one seed was so important this year because of this looming giant that has won 28 straight games. They're the defending national champion, and everyone was angling towards trying to avoid playing Clemson in the national semifinal because they still have Trevor Lawrence, who won the national championship a year ago. They still have Dabo Swinney. Their defense has played dominant football during the course of the year. This is a team that, candidly, they might win it all still, you know, because someone's got to go out there and actually beat them and end this 28-game winning streak if they're going to take down a national championship. So that's why I thought there was so much angling going on. If you wanted to talk about Saturday, and yes, Ohio State did not play well in the first half, that's all well and good, but Ohio State never gave up 400 yards rushing to a bad Ole Miss team, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, at some point, you got to take in the whole body of work. Like I said, I had no problem with what they did, LSU at number one, but just to boil it down to one day, one half, and say this is why you're number one, this is one of the reasons why I bristle with the committee and this 13-member avenue of ranking teams. But ultimately, this is a really good four teams. And let's come to a bottom-line conclusion here. I'm so glad we have a playoff. Mm. You know, the BCS would have left Clemson out.
The defending national champion
that's right.
has won 20. And anyone
that's
who
right.
argued against the playoff has to reckon with, for back-to-back years, right?
That's right.
An undefeated team would have been left out. Like, you can say whether we need 4, 6, 8, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at 2, it would have been this year. You would have either pick who gets left out. The SEC champ with the Heisman Trophy winner, who arguably has the best resume.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Ten undefeated champ with the best player in the country, I think, in the pass rusher, Chase Young. And some would say the best resume, or the defending national champion, who ever since getting tested by UNC has just crushed the world and won 28 straight. One of those teams would have been told, you don't get to prove you're the national champion.
And it would have been Clemson, based on the calculation.
Which is crazy, but I mean, Clemson just sleepwalks through the ACC schedule. I mean, I'm an ACC guy, so I keep a close eye on it, and they demolished my Virginia Cavaliers
yes.
in the ACC championship game on Saturday night in Charlotte. But you were talking about them and talking about how dynamic Trevor Lawrence is.
Yeah.
But on the defensive side of the ball, it's been a little Jekyll and Hyde for that Clemson team this year. I know they're ranked up there again this year, but for Brett Venables with this group, where does this Clemson defense stack up with Clemson defenses in the past couple of years?
Well, it's so different, you know, and if you look at what they were strong at and where they were strong a year ago, they were so great at the line of scrimmage. You think of all those guys in the NFL right now, right? I mean, the Christian Wilkins and so on and so forth, Dexter Lawrence, they were so strong up front, all Americans all across the defensive line. Now you've got a defense that is much stronger in the second level and the third level. So they're a secondary-oriented team. They follow Isaiah Simmons at the linebacker position. I think that's difficult because from a year-to-year shift, they've had to completely change where they're strong, how they develop pressure, how they stop the run, what they're going to do. And so what you saw, at least in my estimation, is a team that didn't really understand how to play early. They were trying to figure themselves out. They were able to do that because they were bored with that ACC schedule. But then late in the season, they started playing better and better and better. Lawrence was bored early in the season, was turning the football over, played better and better and better towards the end of the season. And now, here they are. They've been bored all year, very untested, and yet they're the defending national champ 28 games in a row. I think it's going to be tough to beat Clemson. I really do. Even if it's Ohio State and Phoenix, that's... that's a tough game for Ohio State.
So you like Clemson in that game?
I'm not sure who I'm going to pick just yet. I think it's a flip for me. And I'm a pretty staunch. I believe in Ohio State. I saw them 7 times, for goodness sakes. I need an apartment in Columbus at this point. For me, it's a coin flip. I think Ohio State has been a great team. I think Clemson is a great team. I think Vegas is going to favor Clemson. I think
by 1, it moved up to 2.5, and now it's back around 1.5.
So they're right there, about a flip. It's going to be so interesting because Trevor Lawrence is this generational talent at the quarterback position, and we've got this great pass rusher from Ohio State who has been double and triple teamed now for 2 straight games. Did you see some of those videos of what Wisconsin was doing?
Yeah.
4 guys just sitting on Chase Young. I can't wait to watch that play out. I think it's a coin flip. I think it actually comes down to the inexperienced quarterback for Ohio State. If Justin Fields plays well, I think Ohio State will have a great chance to win.
What about the other game, LSU and Oklahoma?
I mean, I've seen Oklahoma a bunch this year as well, and they're just not what they have been the last couple of years. I don't believe that defense is going to be able to do to LSU what they were able to do to Baylor. I mean, Baylor was playing with a backup quarterback, a third-string quarterback for portions of that game in the Big 12 championship game, and LSU is going to carve them up. I really like Oklahoma had a good year. It's great that they're in the playoff. They're a kind of a placeholder. We were all waiting for who's the number 4 team? It's going to be it was almost Oklahoma by default. Utah said no thanks. You know, yeah. Oregon said no thanks against Arizona State, and now Oklahoma's going to have to go play LSU. That's going to be really tough. And this whole playoff, by the way, is just playing into LSU's hands. They're going to be able to play in Atlanta where they just played. Then, if they win, most likely win against Oklahoma, they get basically a home game for the national championship, and they'll be able to play in New Orleans for the national championship against either Clemson or Ohio State.
Do you like LSU?
He's not going to give his pick.
Overall, I'm not sure.
He has to. That's what it says on the sheet. Ask Joel about his pick.
LSU over Oklahoma, yes.
Okay. All right, so you really know.
Oklahoma in the playoff.
Any of these three, I think, would beat Oklahoma. There's no doubt. I think because of New Orleans, if I had to lay money today in Vegas, I would lay money on LSU.
I told you. The sheet said he was going to do it.
Well, so. Before we go, if I may, just real quick.
Yeah.
This has been, I think, the single best year for Fox in college football. The pregame show, you and Gus doing these great games. You have been such a huge part of it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It's been a monster as far as people watching it and the quality of games. And you and Gus are the best tandem in the business.
Oh, man, that's nice of you. I feel a little, normally
we argue. We don't have to worry about it.
That's nice of you.
We're
about
to get into the fact that
they
didn't play off with 4 home games.
A lot of hard work. A lot of people put in a lot of hard work.
You guys have done an amazing job.
Thank you.
We love to have you here in studio, Joel. Thank you. So
always
much.
Good. You
All
bet,
right.
Jenna.
We're talking about the Lakers, who seem to be making history on a nightly basis. The latest coming Sunday when Anthony Davis and LeBron James became the first Lakers teammates to combine for 70-plus points in consecutive games since Kobe and Shaq did it back in 2003. But LeBron shunned talk of the big picture greatness, saying, "I live too much in the moment." Broussard, will the 21-3 Lakers be an historically great team?
Well, first
of all, is this just a great start?
I love LeBron's answer. That's exactly what you should say. Don't get too far ahead of yourself. Stay in the moment. One, because it's the politically right thing to say, but and it's the right example for your team. But also, that's what they need to do. Don't get ahead of yourself. Look, obviously, they got to win the championship. I think they need to win about 66 games or more. They'll probably do that barring some type of major load management in the second half of the season. But I want to see more. And I picked the Lakers to win it all in the preseason. Obviously, you got to feel good about that pick. But I still want to see more. Number one, we've seen this before. The Bucks, heck, they're 21-3 too. Okay, the Boston Celtics a few years ago, Kyrie Irving's first year there, they started 22-4. We know Golden State over the course of a whole season went 73-9.
Did they start 24-0 that year?
Yes, under Luke Walton.
Yep.
And so we've seen great starts before. The key is to finish it, and that's what they have to do. So I as confident as I am in the Lakers winning this, I'm not as confident in them being the best team in the league as I was, say, in the KD Steph Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Who I just knew would win the championship. So I have to see more. They haven't had the toughest schedule. They're 5-3 against teams 500 or better. Great weekend, you know, when they beat Denver and Utah and even Portland.
And superb road record.
Yes.
They've done it away from home something, because I think most people right now acknowledge Lakers and Bucks are the two best teams in the league. But a lot of people think the Clippers are the next best.
I think the Clippers are
right
there.
And the Clippers, despite the win last night, have a losing record on the road. I have no interest, and neither should LeBron nor Anthony Davis, any about some historically great team. Who are the historically great teams? There is no defined list. We all agree the 72-win Bulls are the best. I think most people agree the best team ever because they won 70 and won the title. The Warriors won 73 games and had the first ever unanimous MVP. And that guy right there snatched it from them. So now nobody considers them a historically great team. Because of the start they've gotten out to, they are in such a great position to achieve what should be their only regular season goal, the one seed in the West. I don't think they should chase. I think Milwaukee might win 68 games. I really do. I think Milwaukee, you said, is also 21-3. They've had a tougher schedule than the Lakers comparatively. And Giannis is trying to win a bunch of MVPs. Giannis is building his resume as we speak. The Lakers could go 39-19 the rest of the way, which is good, but not great. Win 60 games. That's going to be enough for the 60 wins will be enough for the one seed in the West this year. Everyone else has at least 7 losses already. Where the Lakers are going to be able to do their load management is the final few weeks of the year. So I don't even understand the goal of what is historically great. Is it sweeping through the playoffs? I don't think that's possible anymore.
No, and I don't think so. Let me ask you this. So I get, and we're on the same page with LeBron's answer.
Yeah.
At this point in time, in December, before Christmas, you shouldn't even be thinking in terms of being historically great. However, long term, the back of your mind, I do think, I mean, they should be maybe to each other, like LeBron and AD, saying, look, we want to be one of the greatest teams of all time.
But then they have to me, that is a postseason accomplishment, not regular season. It's not
but
about winning 74
games. Some of the regular season
games.
Does. No, I agree with that. But I think if you win 57, you're probably not going to be in the
correct
argument for greatest team of all time or one of the great teams. But I think if they shouldn't shoot for 66. I think they'll get something like that just by playing. But if I think for LeBron and his legacy, AD and his future, if they could become a historically great team, that would be tremendous. And I don't think the Miami teams with LeBron were a historically great
team. The one that won 27 straight had the opportunity to be if they had gone on a massive, if they had swept through the playoffs or come close to it. The problem was the 27-game winning streak took so much out of them that they were gassed come the postseason. If you remember, that was the Ray Allen year.
Right.
That was the year the Spurs took them 7. I just think...
You're not worried about that this year? Am I the only one that's worried that they're so strong and they're putting 100% into every single game when AD's got a bit of a bum shoulder and
no, but that's
getting
why,
beat up a little,
again,
that a great start's not going to affect a great finish?
No, because I think if they, with the whole rest of the West, The Rockets are playing good, but not great. I think the Mavs are slightly overachieving. The Nuggets' best player, Nikola Jokic, still is not in shape. The Clippers are clearly going to load manage all year long, and I think they're going to struggle on the road all year long. They are going. I think the Lakers, with 10 games left in the season, are going to have the one seed in the West all but locked up. Now, they will not have the one seed overall, and I don't think they should chase Milwaukee on that. To your point, Jenna, I don't think they should be going full bore in the final 2 weeks to try to catch Milwaukee in case that's the NBA Finals matchup. That's when they should load manage. That's when you should make sure you are rested and ready. And you know when also they'll be able to load manage? When the Clippers are in a six-game dogfight in the first round with the Jazz, and the Lakers are getting the Phoenix Suns and dealing with them in a week. Like in the first round of the playoffs. That's when you will be able to effectively make sure you're rested. I just don't, the historically great team thing, it's too early for it. And like, what for? People remember the titles. And if you win a title with LeBron in Los Angeles, it will be remembered as a historically great team, even if it's not a Mount Rushmore team. Did you know that as many as 7 out of 10 adults wished they played a musical instrument? Unfortunately, many never do because they think it's either too late for them to start or too expensive. Musician is an online music education platform rethinking the way people learn music. It's the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, or even learn to sing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone and start playing. Musician is perfect whether you're just starting out or have been playing for years. Enjoy thousands of popular songs, expertly crafted lessons and exercises across dozens of genres. Compared to private lessons, Musician is more affordable, lets you learn on your own schedule. You'll get bite-sized lessons, easy-to-follow instructions, and exercises tailored to your goals. Using Musician to learn an instrument like guitar or piano is much better than trying to teach yourself. So, if you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their premium package at musician.com/play. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/play to start your free trial today. That's YOUSICIAN.com/play.
Kawhi's current team is playing Kawhi's former team. Lucky for the Claw, he gets his NBA championship ring. Lucky for the fans, they get to see Kawhi play again as he's well-rested coming off of Monday's load management game. Nobody happier than Drake, Nick.
Yeah.
Nick, can Kawhi have the same impact on the Clippers that he had with the Raptors, do you think?
Before I answer, just quickly, to Ketta, our boss, I am going to go to this game. I'll do the show remotely via Toronto tomorrow. Probably tough to get a flight back after the game tonight, but I'll go. It'll be fun. Get to say hi to your friend Kawhi.
Fox
I'll be
will
right
send
there.
You.
Yeah, just, and I'll do
and
the show
bring
from
you
Toronto.
Back.
Okay,
you're
so
a big guy
I, listen,
here,
I'm,
Nick.
I'm very excited to see this game in person tonight, which I'd love to do.
Is he making fun can of me
he,
or Fox?
Can he have the same impact on the Clippers if they win the title? That's the only way. The only way you can have the same impact for the Clippers, the Raptors, if he wins the title. There has been any...
This year. That's
well,
what you're saying.
Eventually. Right. Yeah, oh, I mean, okay, he wins okay. a title. Until he wins a title in Los Angeles, he will not have the impact he had in Toronto because Kawhi's legacy is a word thrown around too often, so very narrow. Kawhi's legacy in Toronto is based purely off of 6 weeks in the postseason. He was not some great regular season player for them. He was good. He was the best player on their team. He was himself.
He was one of the top players in the league, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I mean, he was second team all NBA, second team all defense, played 3 out of 4 games throughout the season, and they were a 59-win team the year before he got there. They're on pace to, they won 58 last year, and they're on pace to win 58 this year. The difference was, Toronto was a team that couldn't get over the hump in the postseason. That was either because the hump was LeBron James or just the organization, whether it was Dwayne Casey's fault, he was the fall guy for it, or otherwise, couldn't do it. And Kawhi was sensational in the postseason last year from really the first game of the postseason, right, which they lost to Orlando. He made a huge shot in the corner late in that game. That shot right there, what they did against Giannis and the Bucks, and then, of course, in the NBA Finals. But this is – Kawhi has put himself in, I would consider, a bit of an awkward position compared to last season, which was last year he handled being traded to a place he did not want to go to beautifully. He didn't allow
perfectly,
any noise.
Right.
He played. Nobody really gave him any flack for the load management because he was coming off a major injury. When he played excellent. And I don't think they would have, if he'd have missed that shot against the Sixers and they lose in overtime, I don't think people would have killed him for it. I think people would have said, hey, Kawhi did his job because you didn't have the championship expectations
right,
that you now have. Things are different now. He gets to go to the place he wants to go to. He helps orchestrate a trade where they remake the team around getting Paul George. He's missing time again, and they're trying to go head-to-head with the Lakers. So how can he do it? He's got to go win the title. And I know that's unfair, but I don't think it's unfair. I know that's a lofty goal, but that is, to me, the only way to match what he did in Toronto. To me, that's obvious.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, look, what he did in Toronto was just spectacular. I mean, that is one of the greatest runs in recent NBA history because you go to a team for 1 year, and I was saying from the beginning, he could win a championship there and still go to the Clippers. Because at that point, it looked like everybody was saying he's going to the Clippers. And that's, of course, what happened. So to make the most out of 1 year, that's why Toronto will give him a celebration, a coronation. There is no way there could be any ill feelings from the Raptors fans for Kawhi Leonard.
And he didn't mislead them.
No.
He didn't lead them on.
No. Nope.
Because he didn't allow any noise to come with.
One great year. And he hit the only game-winning Game 7 buzzer beater in NBA history.
Yep.
So you got to give him credit for that. Now, to your point, he definitely has to win a championship with the Clippers. I mean, you could say he has to bat 1,000 with the Clippers, you know, win the title every year to equal what he did in Toronto, which he will not do. But he is fully capable of winning a championship. Now, we both picked the Lakers. I feel confident in that pick, but I also feel like the Clippers are capable of beating the Lakers.
And
I think they have a chance.
Do you think they're their biggest competition?
Yes. I mean, Milwaukee is playing great, but The Clippers have two, I mean, some people might say Lou Williams has become a star.
Sure.
So two, maybe three stars. They got a championship coach. They've got great depth, chemistry. Everybody knows their role, and they're hungry. Milwaukee's got one star. I mean, I don't know if we're ready to start calling
Chris Middleton.
Middleton's
not a star. Right. Well, he's the star that Lou Williams is. So they,
okay,
superstars.
So let's say
superstar 2-1, no doubt about it.
Budenholzer's a good coach. Some people thought he had his struggles in the playoffs last year, not Doc Rivers. So, yeah, I think the Clippers are their toughest competition. Kawhi Leonard, look, I get it. He's shooting a career low from the field right now.
He hasn't been very good since Halloween.
I give you the numbers, but when you watch the game, his impact
plays
on the game. Yeah, I hear you. I'm with you. I'm against the load management too. But when he plays, his impact is incredible. He's a mid-range assassin. He's so tough and physical defensively. You just hate playing against him.
So then I will ask you, does it matter if he wins the championship? Does it matter how he wins the championship?
No.
You don't care if he load manages his way right through a title, if he wins the title.
No. If he wins the title,
doesn't matter,
then it's, I would argue, the ripple effects as far as the impact on other players and teams engaging in this level of load management is going to potentially be damaging for the league.
Agreed.
People think I got something against Kawhi. I cross
just
my heart,
little,
I do not.
A little?
No. It is scary to me because of how much I love the NBA that if this level of load management infects the rest of the league, then they really do have to remake the season, remake the schedule. We have to look at so many different things that you and I were joking about off the air yesterday, like the top 75 after 75 years, these types of ways that one of the reasons NBA's popularity is NBA Twitter and the lists and the debates, and all of it changes if it starts being play 60 of 80.
I agree.
And so that's what I'm apprehensive about. Nobody ever thought I had anything against Kawhi Leonard until this season started and he started missing one out of four games when he said it's the best he's ever felt. He's missing a bigger percentage of games this year than he did last year. And the other thing that I pushed back on was the revision is, I know the playoffs matter more than the regular season, no doubt, but they can't be the only thing that matters. The revisionist history of Kawhi Leonard being the best player in the league, it's just a conversation that never existed in NBA circles anywhere until 2 weeks in May and June. Last year, who were discussed as the best players in basketball? LeBron, Durant, Giannis, Steph, Harden. How many people did we have to go down? I mean, in MVP voting, Dame and Jokic finished ahead of him last year.
But he was punished because of, and he's basically foregoing regular season accolades. Yep. Like, I had him on my third team All-NBA.
Because he didn't play enough.
Yeah, that was the only reason, but he didn't play enough. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that he's load managing like this. And what I've said, and I'll say it again, if you load manage like he is, you better win the championship. If they don't win the title, there will be backlash. If he comes back next year after going out in the second round or the Western Conference Finals and load management, there's going to be a lot of backlash.
In a different way, like if the Lakers get it to the NBA Finals, and now I know some people love throwing LeBron's finals record in his face, but set that part of his side. If LeBron and Anthony Davis both play 75, 78 games and they go to the NBA Finals and they lose a war to the Milwaukee Bucks, I think a lot of people, myself included, would say that is a hell of a season. That is a successful season. It might be a little disappointing, but a successful season because of what
they did.
They
lose to the Bucks
throughout the regular season. Yeah, because sometimes it's somebody's time. Maybe it's Giannis's time. The Clippers, it's first or last for them this year because of what the way they are positioning the regular season as preseason, right, which is what they're doing.
The Rockets were in Cleveland last night to play the Cavs. How about James Harden? Just another ho-hum monster night. 55 points, including 20 in the fourth quarter. Harden went 10 of 18 from deep, only needed 5 free throws to drop the double nickel. Rockets hold off the Cavs for the 116-110 win. Nick, is James Harden the best scorer since Wilt?
No, he's second best scorer since Wilt. Wilt, Jordan, Harden. And I think Harden has now passed Elgin, Rick Barry, who gets forgotten in this, Kobe, the KD, and the Kobe one I think is important because Kobe had a year where scoring was the only thing that he was worried about. It was because they couldn't win the title that year. It was the second year without Shaq, and he averaged the 81-point game year, the 62 and three quarters, and he averaged 35 and a half. Harden averaged more than that last year and is going to average more than that this year. This year he might average 40. But I think Harden's done something maybe more notable than become the best scorer since Wilt. I think James Harden this year has right now, and it's a list he doesn't want to be at the top of, but I think he's now at the top of it. I believe James Harden is the best player in NBA history to not have a ring.
Wow.
I think he has, he's surpassed Iverson, he's surpassed CP3, obviously, Patrick Ewing, Elgin, who I love, and I think Elgin is one of the most underrated guys ever, and he's even surpassed our mutual friend Charles Barkley and Karl Malone. I think James Harden is the best player in the history of the NBA without a title. He would like to instead become just the 14th best or 17th best player with the title. I'm sure at some point that's where he wishes to be, but that's what I think. And I know you and I can parse on the scoring thing. I knew you'd probably be taken aback by the best player without a ring.
Yeah, I'm still
But
really.
I mean, he's led the league in assists. He's led the league in scoring. He's won the MVP. He's finished second 3 separate times. Tough to find a better resume of the guys without a ring than the one James Harden.
He's a phenomenal player. There's no doubt about it. I actually voted for him to win another MVP award the first year Steph Curry won it. I would argue maybe Barkley over Harden. Barkley, arguably inch for inch, that's not a term many people use, but inch for inch, the greatest player we've ever seen. I mean, 6'4", really, as a power forward, was a terrific rebounder. Got his team to the finals. Harden hadn't even done that. I mean,
he's been in the finals, but it wasn't his
coming off the bench with Durant and Westbrook. So Barkley at least got a team to the finals and gave Michael Jordan, you know, a lot of trouble in that series. I might also put Malone over him. Obviously, Malone's, what, third all-time scoring?
Second all-time scoring, and he has two MVPs to Harden's one.
Right.
Malone's longevity was and durability. We'd never seen a player as durable as Malone until LeBron. To me, Barkley and Malone are the two best players without a ring, and Elgin gets forgotten. He's third. But I think Harden over the last couple years surpassed him. And here's the thing about taking a team to the finals. Would Barkley have taken a team to the finals if Jordan and the Bulls were in his conference? The answer is no. Look, Harden took his team to what was the de facto NBA Finals, the Western Conference Finals, against KD and Steph and the Warriors, and they were up 3-2 until the second best player got hurt. They were up 15 in Game 7 of that. Does that make sense? Like, that to me, that was the NBA Finals.
But Barkley did have to, I don't remember if they played at this point, but Olajuwon, David Robinson,
sure,
those guys were in the West. Carl Malone and John Stockton.
It was brutal.
The West was tough. But to your point, looking at circumstances, I think there are other players you could put in Mike D'Antoni's system that Harden's green light is unbelievable. If you put Steph Curry in that system,
he couldn't hold
you
up.
Don't think.
No.
I don't know that Harden holds up because he doesn't get it done in the playoffs.
Well, so last year, it should be noted. Last year, James Harden averaged more points, assists, higher field goal percentage in the playoffs in his six games against the Warriors than Kawhi did in his six games against the Warriors against a tougher Warriors team that was much healthier. And Kawhi's team won. He's finals MVP, and it's considered an amazing performance. Harden's team loses, even though Harden, we could put him side by side.
His numbers
Harden
were great.
We're great. So I don't think it's fair to say there's one playoff series where I feel like he got concussed in it. A few years ago, the one against San Antonio. Where
he had other struggles against Golden State.
Early.
Back, yeah.
He had Houston. The 10 turnovers in a closeout game. I get it. But he plays. The thing about Steph is Harden plays every night. Plays super high minutes, has to do all of it. If other guys could do it, they would.
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't, because this isn't proven to win. And you play to win the game, to quote the great Herm Edwards. I mean, and that's why, even though Kawhi's numbers aren't as big as Harden's were against the Warriors, Kawhi gets the love because they won. I just think, and I don't want to take anything away from Harden, because he is historically great, but if Kevin Durant shot as much as James Harden, he could do this.
I don't.
If Kobe Bryant even.
Kobe did.
James Harden has shot 40. I know they can throw out effective field goal percentage because he's a good free throw shooter. He gets to the line and the three pointers. He's shooting 34% from three. He's shooting 14 threes a game.
Yeah.
How many guys couldn't shoot 14 threes a game and put up huge numbers?
Again, so I just public service announcement.
And he shot 44% the last 6 years.
If other 44%. Guys could do it, you should do it. Because route to a half a billion in career earnings, an MVP, and a bunch of runners-up. Like, other guys would want those things. Real quick on Steph. So you think Steph, when he comes back, because his team's going to need it, or Steph, if he hadn't broke his hand.
No, he won't do it.
Steph, if he hadn't broke his hand, could do this.
If you put him in Mike D'Antoni's system, just like we saw Steve Nash would not, with all due respect, would not be a Hall of Famer if he wasn't in Mike D'Antoni's system. Harden would not be averaging these outlandish numbers were it not for Mike D'Antoni's system. If you put Steph, if you put Russ in, give him the ball and take Harden off the team, I'm not saying he'd average 39, but he would put up some astronomical numbers as well. And let me ask you this, Nick. Are you one that says LeBron could average a triple-double for a season?
I don't think,
because I'm saying if that he was could, the only, then do it.
If that was the only thing that mattered to him, sure. I think the rebounding's really hard. I think averaging 10 rebounds a game is really hard. I don't think the. But Harden, it's
if
led
that
to
were
winning.
The only thing that mattered.
But for Harden, there it led to the one seed.
We gotta leave it there. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.